sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
What are your dreams? What are your aspirations? What is a great manager to you? What's a great leader? Tell me about someone who has really developed you in the past and what made them great. And essentially, how do you like to be led? So that's not like where you want to be in 30, 60, 90, but at the same time, instead of like, where do you want to go? What role do you want? It's who do you want to become? Like, what are some of those characteristics that I want molded in me and that I really see leading to more opportunity, whether that's in the role currently or potentially down the road?
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. Now, that was Tara Horstmeyer. Tara is currently the Director of Partner Success at Gravy. And in this episode, we have an extended conversation about building your personal brand on LinkedIn. At Gravy, Tara works with a dynamic CEO, Casey Graham, who is passionate about enabling his team to build their own personal brands on LinkedIn. And he's also a visionary who sees the benefit to his company of empowering people to do this. So Tara takes us through her journey over the past year, really, and her mission to use LinkedIn to share more, give more, engage more, learn more, and most importantly, to grow more. And we dig into the impact this engagement has had for Gravy and for her personal growth as a manager. And I can tell you, she's killing it. She's already been promoted twice so far this year. It's a fun and personal conversation. Make sure you stick around for it. Now, before we get to Tara, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, please leave us a review. We really appreciate your feedback about how we're doing. So thank you. All right, let's jump into it. Tara, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Andy.
So where have you been hanging out during all the good times of the pandemic?
Yeah, all the crazy. Mostly at my home up here, just a little bit north of Atlanta. We call it OTP, as in outside the perimeter in Cumming, Georgia.
And which town you said?
Cumming, Georgia.
Cumming, Georgia. Okay, I've been through there. Yeah. I spent a lot of time like Duluth and Alpharetta and so on. So up in that northern area. And you said you it's a birthday in your home today.
It is. And the funny thing is my oldest is 12 today, and I actually have a big birthday tomorrow. So we are only about an hour and a half apart from each other, but we each have our own day. So
that congratulations.
Yeah, it's celebration and it's a big one. So,
can we ask which big one it is?
Sure. It's the big 40.
Oh, wow. Look at you. You made it.
I made it somehow. I may not look the same, but you know, I made it.
Well, that's good. That's exciting. Wow. 40. Of course, yep. I can't remember my 40th birthday. It was so long ago. But it's good. That's good. 40. I like that. And a 12-year-old. So you've got two other sons, you said.
Yes. So we've got 12, 9, and 2.5.
Now, are they actually going back to school or is it still homeschooling?
Yes. So in the county, we are close to Atlanta, but thankfully, I think our rate honestly has been less than 1% in Forsyth County. So our kids are back in school, or at least we had the option. And everybody has kind of made the choice for themselves and what's best for them and their family. And what was best for us is to send the older two back to in-person school. In middle school, our oldest is sixth grade. And then our middle is in fourth grade. And then, of course, the toddler has been going to daycare actually since May and doing great. So far, so good. Every day, we just kind of keep our fingers crossed.
Well, I was going to say, so as parents, as parents, I mean, you know, the kids bring home stuff all the time that, you know, they're asymptomatic. And then the next day, you're down for the count. So how are you, sort of handling that psychologically and physically?
Well, I mean, you know, we literally are just taking it one day at a time. I think because my father was a pediatrician, so mm-hmm. for me, just being around, you know, obviously this is different, but being around that kind of just illnesses in life and specifically children, we just kind of have the, hey, you know what, we're just going to do everything we can to stay healthy. Ask my kids. I'm like crazy. Like the second they walk in, I'm like, don't touch anything. Go wash your hands.
Yes.
Wash your hands right now. You know, I'll put sticky notes and I'm like right there. So we, you know, we do the best we can. I think like every single parent and every single, just everybody right now, you absolutely do the best you can. But at the same time, just, you know, we've got to keep doing what we feel works for us and mm-hmm. taking all of those precautions, you know, mentally as well as physically into play as we make decisions. And I'm also one of those people to where like, hey, what we feel is best today may not be what we feel is best tomorrow. If things change, then, you know, we'll change and we'll adapt. Yeah. And, you know, if we decide, hey, we need to go to virtual at any point or the school decides, like, we are so like, hey, we're just going to roll with it. And this is a year unlike any other. So that's okay if we need to make changes.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a year like last year, but yeah. It'll have its own trajectory. Yeah. Now, let me ask you, as a working mom and mother of three boys who had to be schooled at home, how'd you guys handle that? I mean, you're running a sales team and running a team of three.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It was, you know, I guess how we handled it is very imperfectly and with as much grace and forgiveness for each other as we could give. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, all of our lives just changed on a dime and being adaptable was just the way it was. So the first Monday after it was, okay, everybody's home, school's locked down, you know, we're virtual back in March. And it was very, very obvious from the beginning that it's like, okay, there's going to be a lot of clunkiness. Like, you know, mm-hmm. the e-learning platform was down. There was tears. There was freaking out. There was people needing something constantly. And I think for me, it was just a decision of like, okay, I'm going to show up right where I need to be. And it was literally a practice in presence. And I did not nail it perfectly. But when I decided, I was like, okay, I've got to be present with my 12-year-old because he needs this specific. And then so my 9-year-old's going to have to wait. And the 2-year-old's going to have to wait. And just kind of going through who needed me the most at that moment throughout the day was really all I could. And, you know, just truly lean on each other for, I mean, my blessing was that I did have a 12-year-old who could kind of rock out his stuff. He's very much a go-getter, wanted to finish things early. So he was finished with enough time to help take care of the 2-year-old and take him on walks and really just be our live-in babysitter for like 2 months. So that helped.
Okay. So here's a question for you then is what did you take from, you know, the lessons learned from managing what your kids are going through and apply it to managing your team virtually?
That's such a good question. I think essentially you could almost replace a 12-year-old with a, you know, 20-something-year-old.
I didn't want to say it. I wanted you to say it. I didn't want to say it, but go ahead. Yes.
Well, but you know, it's like everybody's got needs and everybody just needs different things at different times. And so I think when you just have limited energy and limited capacity and limited just bandwidth, that prioritization for any leader, any manager is going to have to be because it's so tempting to just put out fires as they come or answer what is just the most urgent, but maybe not the most important. And so I think as we all think through just our lives and how we want to, I mean, go through them and tackle things in appropriate order, making sure that, hey, yes, there are things that are urgent, but what's important? And mm-hmm. keeping that for myself, just for my sanity, but also for everybody I was leading or just working alongside and working with, it's just really keeping that focus of, hey, is this the most important thing, or is this just, you know, an urgent fire that really needs to put it, or is it just something that we think is a fire? Then, you know, appropriately handling it that way.
Yeah, the old Eisenhower grid of urgency versus important and so on. Yeah, absolutely. Or quadrants, I guess. For people who aren't familiar with Gravy, tell us what you do.
Yeah, so at Gravy as a whole, we are the go-to resource really for personalized payment recovery at scale for businesses who have recurring revenue models.
And so tell us what that means precisely.
So it means like, hey, let's say that you are a SaaS business with a subscription model. You know that every month you've got churn and there are customers, there are users who are essentially going out the back door with failed payments. And it's not necessarily something that anybody thinks about on the regular, but we do. So we think about, hey, the second that payment fails, some people have, you know, dunning, or they'll have software and they'll do a retry, or they'll do an email sequence. Well, great. Mm-hmm. Completely takes that off of our clients' plates so that they don't think about it. And the way we approach this in the personalized, empathetic, human one-to-one way.
You send the bone breakers to their door.
Yes, we do. No. We send really caring, empathetic people because nobody wants to talk about, you know, failed payments, especially when you're trying to grow your business. And right. Also, you know, go after these failed payments, these customers, these users who are churning. But the way we do it, and, you know, it's really our secret sauce, so to speak, is because, you know, we know that really it's such an issue and it's so important to keep your customers and keep your users engaged. So it's obviously with speed and with effectiveness, but it's really the human solution, to the problem that we put on it. And the results are just wild, you know, go figure. But for us, it's really, really worked. And we have clients who essentially look at us as like a back-end sales team, as well as a retention team, and of course, revenue recovery.
Well, yeah, so that's the question I was wondering is, so how often in the course of revenue, quote unquote, revenue recovery, I won't say collections. Do you then get the customer to, sign up again?
Yeah. So it's wild because in kind of what we do, and that's why we are very different from collection. So collection is more of like old debt or bad debt or past due debt, that kind of thing. Our service is really toward those credit cards that just decline. And there's over 100 reasons why. You know, yes, it could be, hey, you know, you've got a new card number, but there's, insufficient funds. There's just so many reasons that decline. But we are so brand specific with our clients that you don't even know Gravy exists. So people could be listening and actually have, Gravy could have reached out and been like, wow, that was a really nice person saying, hey, I'm here to help you. We're more like a customer service arm of our clients. We come in with just a helpful approach of like, hey, let's get you back on. I know you love this service and resell it in a way that's like, wow, not only am I back in the fold, you know, am I getting my payment back online, but like that was such a great experience that now I'm even more bonded to the brand to begin with. That was so seamless. That person was so helpful. And just made that experience not sticky, you know, and not icky and frustrating, because right. You also want to be back into whatever you've already paid for, essentially.
Interesting. Very interesting. So you're SDR manager for them, or SDR growth manager. So is there a difference between an SDR growth manager and SDR manager?
Not so much. You know, I think I like the term because I essentially, you know, get the job of not just managing. And I feel like, like a lot of people are just different than like managing and leading. But really, to me, it just reminds me every day that I'm in charge not of just metrics and quota, but really their growth and their individual team individual contribution as team members. And so I really love that kind of growth piece to it. Mm-hmm. Because it forces me, honestly, to look at the role and look at just my team differently. So I love that part.
So how do you sit with your individual contributors and say, hey, let's define what your growth goal is, and how do we put together a plan to help you get there?
So it's Easily one of my favorite things that I get to do. And it actually starts before, at least for our last two team members, before they even started, I was able to get an hour with them relationally and just ask, give them essentially a little bit of homework before they even started and said, hey, once you have a little bit more bearings and context, talk through what this looks like for you. And before you even begin, what are your dreams? What are your aspirations? What is a great manager to you? What's a great leader? Tell me about someone who has really developed you in the past and made them great. And essentially, how do you like to be led? And so that's not like, where do you want to be in 30, 60, 90? But at the same time, I'm more, instead of like, where do you want to go? What role do you want? It's who do you want to become? Like, what are some of those characteristics that I want molded in me and that I really see leading to more opportunity, whether that's in the role currently or potentially down the road? And the benefit of us being a startup, it's like, you know, opportunities literally can pop up tomorrow that were not here yesterday.
But I think there's, but I think there's also something to what you're doing in the sense that I think what we too infrequently do with new hires or people at any level really is what you're doing. It's what your dreams are, but I heard or read somebody phrase this in a way I really liked is so what's the lifestyle you envision for yourself? I mean, because when you define it in the context of a lifestyle, then you have to get kind of pragmatic about, okay, cool. So what are the steps to get from where you are to where you want to be in terms of the type of life you want to lead? And put it in that terms, I think, is much more powerful instead of what job do you want to have and how much money do you want to make? I mean, which could be an outgrowth of lifestyle, but if you want to be flying on private jets all the time. But I think it's so important and so rarely done. What you're really talking about to me is mentoring somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's honestly, I think where my passion for this birthed. And I absolutely love just taking someone from A to B, but then letting them see like, hey, there's C, there's D, there's Z, there's all of this over there beyond even what you vision for yourself right now. And even what I envision for myself right now is the ability to have the perspective of someone else's eyes, someone who already believes in you before you believe in yourself. And I've been lucky to have had a bunch of just really great mentors and people pour into me so much. You just naturally, it's not like I wake up and like, I want to be a mentor today, even though I've done that. For me, it's the opportunity every day with, especially working with typically younger workers and people who are still so fresh in their perspective and eyes, just to say, hey, don't even just look past today. I mean, just look past today. Don't even look to tomorrow, but let's look to next week. And let's think huge, you know, but I'm also very practical. So it's like, you can get kind of too big for your britches sometimes, but I'm like, well, like you were saying, what does that mean in terms of actionable steps that we can work toward today, this week, next week, while you are working toward your KPIs and hitting your goals? What does this mean in the bigger scheme of things, but also what does this mean for you today?
Yeah, I think this for me too often is missing, in especially in today's sales environment, where coaching tends to be very transactional, and we miss what I call mentoring, which is different, which is the development of the individual, not as a salesperson, but the development of the individual, which is going to benefit the salesperson, and that has to be paid attention to as keenly as you do how we develop this person as a salesperson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you're leaving so much opportunity on the table when you do, when you just look at them on one dimensional, essentially, instead of taking into account their entire being and their entire person. And yes, there's times where you do want to just say, okay, let's focus in on skills. Let's focus in on how we can write this better, how we can communicate or message or all of that. And I'm such a fan of all of those. But I think truly to unlock and develop their entire potential, you have got to also dig into other areas of their life that they'll let you in, which I mean, is so like, it's just such a trust thing that you hope to build over time. You can't walk in first day for most people and say, tell me your life story and I want to make all these great things. I mean, I wouldn't, but for most people, you have to earn that and know that even if you do say that, they're going to give you, you know, that a small portion of who they are. And then you've just got to earn it over time and making those deposits as their leader, showing them, hey, you can trust me with more than just your KPIs. You can trust me with more than just your quota. But I've got to show that to them every day.
Well, it's no different than what you have to show to your buyers, because the trust has to exist there for them to share information with you, the level of information that you need, and to be open and vulnerable and so on. So yeah, it's a great lesson for sellers to experience, because it mimics what you have to do in a customer interaction as well. Now, one of the reasons I want to chat with you is because you, your whole company, actually, led by your CEO, Casey Graham, have really embraced LinkedIn, I believe, in a very effective fashion that I think could be a role model, if you will, for people out here in sales that are looking to, you know, build their own brand, build the company's brand, engage with potential customers, and so on. So you've committed yourself to this process and just want to go through it. And it's funny, you wrote in a post, you said, you know, LinkedIn is ridiculous. So tell people what you meant by that.
Well, what I meant was, it's so funny because I think anytime you go into a social media, you automatically have preconceived notions, you know, especially when you've been around a minute like I have, you know, and have seen the birth of Facebook and Instagram and all of these different platforms. And LinkedIn was always something, especially just with my very unusual career journey, that I just never embraced. I literally thought, like a lot of people who I talk to, unfortunately, and I feel almost like an evangelist now, you know, telling everybody about like how great LinkedIn really is I just kind of thought like, hey, it's something for those people who really had their stuff together, were super professional, had years and years of all of this hardcore experience, and were writing like white papers, you know, so that I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't belong, you know, like that's just not right. Me. But once Casey really honestly started, and he'll tell you too, anybody that just modeling the way of like, oh, this is not what I thought it was, or maybe it was, but now it's different and now it's morphed, into that. And so it took me a minute. I initially tried to engage a little bit at the beginning of the year, but then as we know, 2020, you know, the world ended essentially.
Right.
So I stepped back to focus on all the things and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, but really it was right at the beginning of summer. And I really saw Casey develop. I mean, honestly, for me, I'm such a relational person that I just saw all the relational, people he was connecting with, the connections, the conversations, how much he was learning from other people. And, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to give this a shot. Not even like that there was an end goal, but like, I just want to connect and I want to learn. And by that time, I was doing what a lot of people do, which I think is just like scrolling through posts, looking, learning, connecting, but not really giving back, you know, not posting as well, you know, just kind of, and it's, there's nothing wrong with it, but that's how I was engaging, just to see, just to kind of get my swimming feet under me. And once I just saw like, oh gosh, there are normal people, regular people who are just sharing what they're learning, what they're seeing, you know, leadership lessons all the way down to strategic, how to write emails. I mean, it was such a, just all across the board of incredible, incredible people with really, for me, individual, unique perspectives and voices that I was like, well, shoot, I'm just going to put stuff out. So I did. And what was ridiculous about it was, of course, the positive feedback and people saying things, but it was just more for me. I think it was ridiculous in the amount of just connections that I was able to make with just genuine, awesome, normal people, you know, who are just trying to figure out this career world, this working world, this life, just like the rest of us are, and doing so in a way that's really bringing value to other people. And so that's what made it honestly ridiculous for me.
Well, but and so here's the question is someone's going to hear that, and they're, let's say, someone in the same role as you're in as frontline manager, and gonna say, well, I don't know. It seems like it's a distraction to have my people do this. I mean, what do they get out of it? What if I do that? You know, what do I get out of it? They're probably asking. And more often than not, I think at this point. So what are you getting out of it?
So I think for me personally, you know, as more of us do it, it is brand recognition and exposure. But the whole, I guess the key for me is that I didn't go into it saying necessarily, I don't know if that's the right question that I was asking, what am I going to get out of it? It was more, and I guess it could be as
well, but
yes, I've gotten connected.
Well, yeah, the question is, if not, what do you get out of it? The question is, well, okay, based on what you're doing so far, is why keep on doing it?
Well, I think for me, it's pretty clear because now I'm so involved in the community there and the people there that I miss it. You know, I went on vacation for a week and I think I posted once or twice, but I was still looking. And it's just kind of one of those things that you feel like there's something going on there that not that I need to, there's no need to like post or interact. I mean, I take days off every week. I'm not a everyday poster kind of thing, but I just really love, I've just gotten so used to learning essentially every day. So for me, it's really been a great tool of, hey, here's what I'm learning. What do you think? You know, so I really am one of those people that I try to ask a question in my post just to get other feedback, other thoughts, and other perspectives to think outside of my, you know, echo chamber in my head, essentially, that thinks I'm always right. And I'm like, nope, that's not true. Yeah. So I get a lot out of it from, again, from the engagement as in the conversations that happen, whether I post something or someone else posts something and I comment. That to me is where the gold is really in the conversations.
And learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and so let's, that's a whole nother aspect that I think that people don't talk enough about. And we had Justin Welsh on the show a couple weeks ago, talked about, you know, building your personal brand on LinkedIn, which I think is hugely important these days for sure. But in addition, as you're talking about, is you're learning.
Oh my gosh.
And this is so important as if, you know, here is a venue in LinkedIn that certainly for salespeople where there's, yeah, arguably you could say too much sales content perhaps, but what you're finding value in and what you're saying, which I think is really interesting, is not necessarily, yeah, the white paper is written by the sales expert, but just the connection I make with someone else that has their own perspective on what they're doing and what I can learn from that perspective and apply to my job.
Absolutely. I joke, I call it the mastermind in my pocket. I've used that before because I literally can scroll through there and get actionable things. It's like it's providing feedback loops in real time, which is so great, especially I think in sales when you are so go, let's just and in a startup environment, which I'm a huge believer that like everybody should kind of have that startup mindset of just let's test things, let's try things. And then if it doesn't work, like that's okay. We'll throw it out, but something works, you know, or it's worked for them. Let's try it for us. So for example, last fall when I just first started kind of engaging, someone posted a video strategy and I was like, well, I'm going to go try that. And literally tried it, booked a meeting. It was amazing. And I, you know, messaged him immediately and was like, thank you for posting that tip. Like you literally just booked me a meeting. And I would not have thought of that. And it was just somewhat, you know, an SDR doing their thing. And it was one of those again, where I'm like, it's not just, I mean, there are great, higher level, you know, thoughts and like, gosh, that really made me think about things. But then there's so much practical, like, hey, here's, you know, here's three tips to try, or what about doing this? And of course, Josh Braun is amazing with just all of his email tips. And I, you know, so I just, I'm a constant learner, but I'm also a constant trier, you know, so I love to try it.
Well, and so a question though is about this, because I think this is really to the point that, you know, I want to make for people here is that you wouldn't, I mean, yeah, you can just go on LinkedIn and be a voyeur and, you know, consume. But I think for what you're saying is that you've actually been able to get more that you'd get from just reading by actually engaging, actually putting stuff out there, and then engaging in addition to it.
Yes. I mean, hands down. And, you know, it's just so interesting that it takes so much courage to just make that first post or to make that first post and be like, did two people see it? I don't know. And then to again and again, like it takes so much courage. But my encouragement, I'm like, well, courage is encouragement. It's really that, hey, you know, once you do and really once you find your people and you put yourself out there first, you know, I'm always like, show up in the comments. Like if you're afraid to make that first post or you don't know what to say, go ahead and just kind of get your feet wet by commenting on other things that you see. And eventually you'll get the hang of it. You'll get used to sharing your voice, even if it's not necessarily putting out that first post, but even before you do. And I think I did that for a little bit too. It's like, let me just kind of engage and, you know, just kind of put myself out there a little bit and then just start making those posts and start engaging, but really doing it as a, hey, how can this, it just like it has helped me and I've learned so much. I really try to put my post or what I write through the eyes of, could this help someone else? You know, could this, could they learn from this, or could this give them a pause to think about something?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be anything like crazy, deep, or profound, but just enough to be like, I want to get
precisely. Yeah, precisely. Yeah. And this is, I think, the thing I really urge people, if they're listening to this, to take to heart is that, and I've said this before on the show, is that your experience is as valid as anybody else's in sales. If you've done something and it worked for you, even if it only worked once or twice, so what? Share it, right? It, somebody else may find value in it. You know, you don't have to have spent 20 years doing it to say, yeah, this is valid. Is what we need is we need more people writing to you, as you said, on a personal, genuine basis, what works for them. And just put it out there. And then, yeah, let people get access to it. And this may be where we find the next sort of revolutionary thing we do in sales. Instead of thinking the only people that should have a voice are those people that, you know, have written the books or whatever. This is a place everybody can help move sales forward. And this is the way to do it, one post at a time.
Absolutely. I can't think of a better way to say that because it's so true. And it really has been my story, you know, is when I think about, I just didn't think I was enough in a lot of ways to like, what does it matter what I say? And I'm not, you know, this cookie cutter person, or this is not my experience, but I'm such a, and that's what I tell, you know, even our newest team members, it's like, hey, your experience is your experience and your perspective. Mm-hmm. Perspective. And if anything, we need that. We need the fresh eyes. We need, like you were saying, the person who could have the next innovation, not because they looked at someone else and said, hey, I'm going to copy exactly that. But, you know, you're trying stuff and you're going by gut and you're just testing things and then putting it out there just to say, hey, like, you know, again, this is my experience and this is what I'm going through, but this is important and should be shared. And I think the confidence that it takes to do that is going to bleed over in every area of your life.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, if you write about your sales experience, you're going to understand, you'll come to understand your experience in a way you didn't before. You'll actually have thought it through. If you get feedback on it. Yeah. I remember I wrote my first book. Someone said, what's it about? And I said, well, that's so funny. You know, I thought it was about one thing, but then I started reading what people were writing about it. And I thought, oh, maybe it's about something else altogether. Right. It was that interaction that really helped me understand what I had written.
Yeah, that's so important. And it's, you know, but you also took the time to listen, which I think is so important. It's like, you know, I try to say, and again, this is, people are busy and there is absolutely nothing wrong, you know, with anybody who, what I kind of call, like, I try not to like post and ghost. Like, that's my thing is, right. If somebody comments, I want to comment. I want to listen. I want to take their feedback. I want to engage. I want to ask them maybe another question. If, you know, they put something that I thought was interesting, it's, you know, I love the tell me more. Not because of anything other than like, wow, this is genuine perspective. And maybe not at all what, like you were saying, what I even thought I was posting about, or because it's going to hit everybody different, which is absolutely fascinating to me because it's a lesson in listening and it's a lesson in people.
Yeah. No, it is. And like I said, your experience, you, the listener, everybody that's, you know, hearing this, is your experiences are as valid as anybody else's. So share it. And then you learn more about it in the process of doing that. And I think that becomes such a critical thing in your own development, is you have a chance now to, which certainly didn't exist when I was coming up in the world other than, you know, writing a book, is, trying stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Just try it.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. If you don't try it, we always know those quotes of like, well, you're going to fail 100% of the time of the things that you don't try. But
that's
if
right.
You do try, then imagine the potential, the results, or just who you're becoming by trying, you know, like even just take your eye off of as a metric or anything that it's like, if I don't get this result, I failed. And my, you know, just my being is I'm like, well, I failed if I didn't even try, if I did not even put myself out there. And it takes a lot of courage. I'm actually a little more risk averse, I think, than I sound, that it does take. But once you do, it's just like a muscle, like anything else. Once you start really yourself out and showing up and testing things in one area and finding success, not necessarily in what you thought was successful, but just in yourself, of confidence of like, dang, that was hard, but I did it. So now when I pick up the phone, or when I, you know, do this pitch, or when I try this thing, or I go to my mom and I ask for something, you just innately are more confident and you really are becoming more of your best self. So it is wild that doing something simple, it seems simple, by getting outside your comfort zone and posting, or, you know, speaking up in a meeting, or just doing any of these little things that do require courage, for some more than others, for some maybe a little bit less, but anything that stretches you in that way, just it's just a muscle that grows and really can impact your life beyond your career and beyond your work.
Exactly. Very well said. And I think also, I would suspect, while I'll ask you the question, is I think as a woman in sales, that doing what you're doing in this approach is, yeah, there's sort of maybe hopefully less of the, or more freedom to post than you might feel otherwise in other environments, to speak up and to develop your voice.
Well, I've always been someone who is not afraid to speak up and develop my voice. You know, especially I've always been, it's interesting, I kind of look back at just my career journey, and it started when in college and right out, I was working on the sports desk and was a journalist. And so very much I was the only female, you know, so in a lot of roles or in a lot of positions that I've been in, not all of them, but I have been one of the only females, and now I'm in a house where I'm the only female.
So, yes, you are.
So I do think that, you know, there's value in that. And, you know, it definitely offers a unique perspective, because there are not as many women who are in sales or sales leadership, and or even, you know, marketing leadership. And we're seeing a lot more of that. And so part of what I think keeps me going and drives me is seeing more and more of that, or seeing more people, you know, step up to the plate and say, I've got something to say, and I'm not going to be shy, because I have all of these examples around me and ahead of me, and these cheerleaders beside me who are male and female, you know, and wasn't the case necessarily 20 years ago when I was working sports, you know, and it was very much, I had to prove myself before I could, essentially post myself, you know, I couldn't put myself out there as easily as, some other people potentially could, who were in the same roles or positions. But, I think, again, taking those first steps of saying, I'm going to be different, and that's okay. And then that allowed me the courage to just put myself out there more and more as I've gone.
Love it. Love it. Well, Tara, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but it's been a pleasure. Oh, it's been great. And so people want to connect with you, obviously, on LinkedIn, but if they want to connect with you otherwise, how can they do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you can check us out at gravysolutions.io and find me there. So shoot me an email anytime.
All right. Tara, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Andy. I appreciate it.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. I'm so grateful for your support of this program. And I want to thank my guest, Tara Horstmeier, for sharing her insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you could also leave us a rating or review, let us know how we're doing. We'd certainly appreciate that. And you can do all that on your phone in less than a minute as soon as this episode is over. So thank you for your help. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.